since it's based on gas tax. We've seen more usage. We're seeing more vehicle miles traveled, but we're seeing higher mile per gallon vehicles. And so we're actually seeing, finally seeing a flat line in the use of the actual gallons of gas. And so we're actually, for the first time in probably several years, either projecting out flat or actually a decrease in our revenues that come in through the gas tax. On the federal side, they have to renew the what we're currently under, what's called the FAST Act, and it was for about 6 years, which has been very good as far as stability and knowing where the funds come from. They've got to renew that this year. You know, we try to put a little optimism into our budget, but we also know there's going to be some challenges there. There were challenges the last few acts that were passed. I mean, it was very contentious even then, and I think the conditions in Congress aren't getting any better as far as people agreeing and voting and passing things. So we're a little concerned about federal funding, but we're going to continue to monitor that. But we've got stability through September with the current funding. They'll need to pass something new for the next fiscal year. Hopefully something will happen on that. So a lot of expenses on our end with the aging bridges, especially in our district. A lot of stuff on the interstate was built in the 50s. A lot of lake bridges were built in the 50s and 60s also. It just happens that we have issues throughout the state, but in specifically in our area, it seems like the lake bridges and the interstate bridges are all in the same time frame, which makes it kind of unique for us. But we'll continue to address those. We've got a Taney-Como bridge on 65 as you're going south from Branson to Hollister. We'll be working on deck repairs to that in 2021. Mainly focused on the southbound. We'll do a little bit of repair work to the northbound, but it's a lot younger, so it's a newer bridge, so not much there. And then Long Creek is coming up. That's the big one in 2022. We are continuing to work in the background on that, getting our environmental clearances, working with the Corps of Engineers to make sure they're in the loop and they know what we're gonna come forward with. Don't seem to be any hiccups or hitches right now, but we're early in the process, so hopefully that will go well. As far as legislative priorities for this year, our legislative priorities continue to be the same as they've been in past years. We would like to see a primary seatbelt law, and we're trying to get something passed that would limit the use of smartphones, distracted driving, for our roadway users. We are placing an emphasis, what we can do is we're placing an emphasis on our Buckle Up, Phone Down campaign. We're really, really pushing that. Our director is actually the president of our national association this year, the State Highway Transportation Officials, and so he'll be pushing that on a nationwide level, really hoping to see increased emphasis and recognition of the fact that people need to just put those phones down and make sure they've got their seatbelts on. Our usage actually went from 82%, which had been kind of flatline for several years as far as seatbelt usage. We've seen it steadily increase, and we've gotten up to about 87%. So we've got 12 or 13% based on surveys of the population who are not using seatbelts, and they account for over 60% of our fatalities. So your odds are not good if you're not wearing a seatbelt and you're in a wreck. And we're going to keep emphasizing that. So that's our legislative priorities. That's our, our emphasis areas. Caught you guys up a little bit on our construction plans in the near future. Do you have anything for me?
You didn't. I still get asked questions about the bridge over
160.
What I had told people after I thought I'd talked to you that they'd be doing something on the deck this summer.
I believe they are still looking at what it is the at the end of the bridges there's an expansion joint. Actually, on that bridge there may be more than just the end expansion joints, but our bridge engineer said that those expansion joints have basically kind of locked up. They're no longer allowing the bridge to expand and contract. He felt like that was maybe some of the what contributed to the damage underneath, so he's wanting to go in and try to get those joints repaired. And I don't know a time schedule on that, but that will be something we'll probably do with our own crews again. So,
and probably
probably be this year, yes. We'll continue to monitor it, and the risk we take if we don't do it this year is that we could be accelerating the wear and tear on the bridge. So he's going to try to get it fixed as soon as they can. It won't endanger the bridge. It won't give us any immediate failure, but it could just lessen the life of the repairs that we did. So it's a priority to him to try to get that fixed.
And just for the people, would it close one lane or close it?
No, I did ask about that, and he said that the type of repair work they're planning on doing, unless they have to just do like a flagging operation where you might be sitting in traffic for 10 or 15 minutes, they don't have a full closure plan, though. They're planning on having it like a one-lane type of operation. So they would just flag you through the work zone, but you'll be able to get through the bridge.
But they would know ahead of time and...
Yeah, we'll definitely schedule that. That will be scheduled work. That will not be emergency work, so...
Good. On another thing I'd ask by, is there any chance that MoDOC, if the commission agreed to work on a turn lane at Kirbyville School, if they could partner with a road and bridge crew to do the work of possibly getting that to happen?
We had a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and I believe they were going to get back to us with some additional numbers on the estimated cost. It might be that it would be a good candidate for the cost share program. We don't have any funding on the district level. We made funding available when we did the roundabout. We had some funding available on the district level, and so we actually did what I would call a district cost share. Those funds are no longer available. We don't have that flexibility. So any cost sharing that we'd be looking at in the future would be through the statewide program, which we've had very good success with. We very rarely let something go up to a statewide level without knowing that it's going to be approved. So, but we're in the initial discussion of how much will it cost, who's going to pay for what, that type of thing. So, but we have met with your staff and with the school and with the property owner that's right next to the school there. So
there is a possibility that they would agree to let Tenney County help on that and get it to happen? Possibility?
Yeah, if you're talking about funding, I don't know if we're talking about construction. That was not really, it was discussed, but not in detail. That would be something we'd have to kind of get down in the weeds on a little bit more.
Okay.
I think it's still early in the conversation, but that's
exactly.
Not,
that's I think we kind of need to know how much we're talking about first before. But I will say that we have to be very careful because we're using federal funds on everything. We can't just go out and do projects ourselves. We can do things that we can show that are maintenance, but we can't do things that look like we're in competition with contractors. The idea of those federal funds is those federal funds are supposed to flow. We've been repeatedly told that we don't take them and internalize them and prevent competition. So that puts a great bit of pressure on us. Whenever we have cities that are wanting to use those federal grant funds for like sidewalks, we go through the same process with them because they would like to be able to do a lot of the work themselves, but the idea of the program is to make a betterment in the community, but it does have to flow outward and make sure that those dollars are circulating and not just internal.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
On the safety funds that you guys have, do you still have those?
We have a set-aside pool of funds every year that comes down through the federal.
So safety is also federal?
Yes. Yeah, it's the federal funds we get, and then some of those are set aside that you have to use as safety.
So it would fall under the same requirements of...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And honestly, the safety funds, the criteria for the safety funds is pretty stringent as far as... it can be something that you think is going to make it safer, but that really doesn't have any relation to. It has to either be like a systemic safety improvement that you show you've got a certain type of wrecks, like run off the road, so then you get to spend the safety funds on the rumbles on the side of the road. Or it could be a spot improvement, but you have to have a higher than normal crash rate. Like you have to show that you've had a historic rate of higher crashes than anywhere else so that you can rank
them. You have to have somebody get hurt before the...
Yeah, you have to have a way to be able to rank those funds is basically what it comes down to.
Well, I understand. You still have to, somebody has to get hurt before they'll actually spend the money to fix it.
And unfortunately, there's already a list. So if we ever got past that point where we didn't make the list up that way, I would be very happy, because that would mean I could be proactive instead of reactive.
Instead of just heard, it's more like a death. I mean, that moves it up.
Yeah, yeah. There are actually criteria for fatalities versus mm-hmm. disabling injuries versus minor injuries. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it makes sense. You know, you don't want to be saying these are our safety funds and we're going to take them and put them on an intersection because we had a whole bunch of rear-end accidents and nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
But we're tired of it, so we're going to spend the safety. You know, you really need to put them in the right place.
And was 12 to 13% do not wear seat belts, and did I get it right that 60% of our
60
fatalities?
60 to 62% are the folks that are unbelted are our fatalities. So they're like 60% of our fatalities, even though they're only 12 to 13% of the population.
Yeah.
I keep emphasizing that. And if you guys want, I'm sure you probably get this from some source, but we do have all of the crash data broken down by counties too. And, you know, that includes all fatalities associated with roadways. So it's not just our system. That's when I talk about fatalities, we're talking about the entire roadway system, city streets, county roads, state routes. So if you ever need that information, I can reach out to our traffic safety folks and get you that information. So.
Do they keep track of, like, I was getting some information on Kirbyville School. Do they keep track if it's just a fender bender, as you call it?
Anything that gets reported and put on a highway, like the standard report that goes to the highway patrol, will then get into our database, because we share the database with the highway patrol. In some jurisdictions, like up in Springfield, if it's not an injury crash, they don't have to file a report. It's voluntary.
So for a while there, they were saying take your insurance between each other and don't call us.
Yeah. So it makes it very hard for us to get good data, because our data is all based on police reports.
Thank you. We'll recess upstairs. We're scheduled for a road and bridge roundtable discussion. We'll be in recess. I have